as I've got a very tender heart.
Uh-huh.
I walked away. It was too hot to fight. It was certainly too hot to cry. I kicked over some plastic flowers and a tattered green cardboard cross. This was one of the most boring trips I'd ever taken with the Pearls. I tried to remember why I'd even wanted to come. At home, Mama would be making fresh iced tea, boiling up sugar water to mix in it. Reese would be slicing peaches. Daddy Glenn would be out of the way, off working on the lawnmower. I swatted at mosquitoes and hoped my face wasn't sunburning. I was tired of Shannon, tired of her mama's endless simpering endearments, tired of her daddy's smug contempt, and even more tired of my own jealousy. I stopped. The music coming through the cottonwoods was gospel. Gut-shaken, deep-bellied, powerful voices rolled through the dried leaves and hot air. This was the real stuff. I could feel the whiskey edge, the grief and holding on, the dark night terror and determination of real gospel.
My God, I breathed.
It was the best my God I'd ever put out, a long, scared whisper that meant I just might start to believe he hid in cottonwoods. There was a church there, clapboard walls standing on cement blocks, and no pretense of stained glass windows, just yellow glass reflecting back sunlight. All the windows open to let in the breeze and let out that music.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
A woman's voice rose and rolled over the deeper men's voices, rolled out so strong it seemed to rustle the leaves on the cottonwood trees.
Amen, Lord.
Sweet Jesus, she can sing.
Shannon ignored me and kept pulling up wildflowers.
You hear that? We got to tell your daddy.
Shannon turned and stared at me with a peculiar angry expression. He don't handle colored. Ain't no money in handling colored. At that I froze, realizing that such a church off such a dirt road had to be just that. A colored church. And I knew what that meant. Of course I did. Still, I heard myself whisper, that ain't one good voice. That's a churchful.
It's colored. It's niggers.
Shannon's voice was as loud as I'd ever heard it and shrill with indignation.
My daddy don't handle niggers.
She threw wildflowers at me and stamped her foot.
And you made me say that. Mama always said a good Christian don't use the word nigger. Jesus be my witness, I wouldn't have said it if you hadn't made me.
You crazy. You just plain crazy. My voice was shaking. The way Shannon said nigger tore at me. The tone pitched exactly like the echoing sound of Aunt Madeline sneering trash when she thought I wasn't close enough to hear. I wondered what Shannon heard in my voice that made her as angry as I was. Maybe it was the heat. Maybe it was the shame we were both feeling. Or maybe it was simply that Shannon Pearl and I were righteously tired of each other. Shannon threw another handful of flowers at me.
I'm crazy, me? What do you think you are? You and your mama and your whole family. Everybody knows you're all a bunch of drunks and thieves and bastards. Everybody knows you just come round so you can eat off my mama's table and beg scraps we don't want no more. Everybody knows who you are.
I was moving before I could stop myself, my hands flying up to slap together right in front of her face. A last-minute attempt not to hit her.
You bitch! You wide-ass bitch!
I wrung my hands, trying to keep myself from slapping her pasty face.
Don't you never hit anybody in the face,
Mama always said.
You little shit! You fuck off!
I put the words out as slick and fast as any of my uncles. Shannon's mouth fell open.
You just fuck off!
I kicked red dirt up onto her gingham skirt. Shannon's face twisted.
You ain't never gonna go to another gospel show with us again. I'm gonna tell my mama what you called me, and she ain't ever gonna let you come near me again. Your mama, your mama, you'd piss in a Pepsi bottle if your mama told you to. Listen to you, you trash. You nothing but trash. Your mama's trash, and your grandma, and your whole dirty family.
I swung at her then with my hand wide open, right at her face, but I was too angry. I was crazy angry, and I tripped, falling onto the red dirt on my spread hands. My right hand came down on a broken clay pot, hurting me so bad I could barely see Shannon's dripping, flushed cheeks.
Oh, shit. You... shit!
If I could have jumped up and caught her, I would have ripped out handfuls of that cotton candy hair. Shannon stood still and watched as I pushed myself up and grabbed my right hand with my left. I was crying, I realized, the tears running down my face while behind us the choir had never stopped singing. That woman's voice still rolled over the cottonwoods.
Was blind, but now I see.
You're ugly. I swallowed my tears and made myself speak very quietly. You're God's own ugly child, and you're gonna be an ugly woman. A lonely, ugly old woman. Shannon's lips started to tremble, poking out of her face so that she was uglier than I'd ever seen her. A doll carved out of cold grease melting in the heat. You ugly thing, I went on. You monster! You greasy, cross-eyed, stinking, sweaty-faced, ugly thing! I pointed all my fingers at her and spit at her patent leather shoes. You so ugly, your own mama don't even love you! Shannon backed off, turned around, and started running.
Mama!
She wailed as she ran. I kept yelling after her, more to keep myself from crying now than to hurt her. Ugly! 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 Chapter 12. There was no way on God's green earth that I was ever going to speak to Shannon Pearl again. I didn't even want to go to church. Damn Bushy Creek anyway, I told Reese. Ain't nobody there can sing worth a damn. And that preacher's so full of himself, he crowds out all the air, what air there is, all those old biddies sweating talcum powder and perfume. Listen to you. Reese wrapped my belt buckle with her knuckles and then reached past me for the little bit of Coke left in the bottle I'd just set down. Sounds like you done lost your religion. Reese and I had turned from absolute allies into competitors overnight, arguing all the time and fighting over everything from who got the chicken gizzard to who was the toughest. After years of wearing finger curls and ruffled dresses, Reese had turned tomboy with a vengeance, wrestling and spitting with the boys and refusing to wear anything Mama bought her. She'd begged a couple of pairs of Butch's old coveralls from Dee Dee and wore them all the time, but what she really wanted was a pair of blue jeans just like the ones I'd bought myself with my dishwashing money. She was also fiercely jealous of the braided leather belt Uncle Earl had sent me, with its brightly polished buckle shaped like a horseshoe, and was constantly trying to get her hands on it. I had to keep my eye on her, or she would have borrowed it every chance she got. You should talk, I snapped, wishing she would just go away and leave me alone. You just go to church so you can beg Kool-Aid and cookies after Sunday school.
I ain't ashamed of that. I don't see you turning down nothing people are giving away for free. Besides, you're just jealous 'cause everybody's always petting on me at Sunday school, and it used to be you getting all the attention.
I snorted contemptuously, but said nothing. You couldn't argue with Reese. She lacked it too much. I hooked my thumbs behind my belt buckle and leaned back to stare at her, refusing to speak. Silence was the only way to get to Reese. She couldn't stand it if you wouldn't talk to her.
Oh, don't you start that, you mean old thing!
Reese stamped her bare feet in the dirt and pointed the Coke bottle at me.
I'm on to you, Bone. I know all your tricks, and I ain't gonna play no more. You just sit on your old damn belt. I hope it strangles you. I ain't gonna be there to see it.
It was around then that I discovered that Reese was masturbating almost as often as I was. In the middle of the night, I woke up to feel the bed shaking slightly. Instead of sprawling across the bottom of the bed as she usually did, her legs and arms thrown wide, Reese was at the far edge of the mattress, her body taut and curved away from me. I could hear the sound of her breathing, fast and shallow. I knew immediately what she was doing. I kept still, my own breathing quiet and steady. After a while, there was a moment when she held her breath, and then the shaking stopped. Very quietly then,
I slipped my right hand down between my legs and held myself. I wanted to do it too, but I couldn't stand the thought that she might hear. But what if she did? I felt Reese relax and sprawl wide again. I held my breath. I moved my hand. I almost did not shake the bed at all. Reese would go back to our bedroom alone every day when we got home from school. When she came out, I would go in. Sometimes I even imagined I could smell what she had been doing. But that could not have been so. She was a little girl and smelled like a little girl. Neither of us smelled like Mama. The ripe, fleshy scent of a woman grown. I pulled my shorts down and made sure of it, carefully washing between my legs with warm soap and water every time I did that thing I knew my sister was doing too. One afternoon, I went outside and stood listening for the sound of Reese alone in the bedroom. She was quiet, very quiet, but I could hear the rhythm of her breathing as it gradually picked up speed and the soft little grunts she made before it began to slow down again. I liked those grunts. When Reese did it in the middle of the night, she never made any sound at all. But then, I was just as careful myself even when I was safely alone. I wondered if Reese did it differently in the daytime. I wondered if she lay on her back with her legs wide, the way I liked to when I was alone, rather than on her stomach with both hands under her the way she did at night. There was no way to spy on her, no way to know. But I imagined Reese sometimes while I did it myself, seeing her sprawled across our big Hollywood bed, rocking only slightly, showing by nothing but her breathing that she was committing a sin. I walked in on Reese one afternoon while she was lying on the bed with a pair of Mama's panties over her face. All her features were outlined under the sheer material, but her breath puffed the silk out over her lips. Frantically, she snatched them off and shoved them behind her on the bed. I grabbed a book I had been reading off the dresser and pretended I hadn't seen anything. Reese played out her own stories in the woods behind the house. I watched her one afternoon from the top of the tree Mama hung her bird feeder on. She hadn't seen me climb up there and didn't know I had a clear view of her as she ran around in an old sheet tied to her neck like a cape. She seemed to be pretending to fight off imaginary attackers. Then she dropped to the ground and pretended to be wrestling. Rolling around in the grass and wet leaves, she kept shouting, "No! No!" The haughty expression on her face was replaced by mock terror as she threw her head back and forth wildly, like the heroine in an adventure movie. I hugged myself tightly to the tree and rocked my hips against the indifferent trunk. I imagined I was tied to the branches above and below me. Someone had beaten me with dry sticks and put their hands in my clothes. Someone. Someone, I imagined. Someone had tied me high up in the tree, gagged me, and left me to starve to death while the blackbirds pecked at my ears. I rocked and rocked, pushing my thighs into the rough bark. Below me, Reese pushed her hips into the leaves and made grunting noises. Someone, someone, she imagined, was doing terrible, exciting things to her. Reese and I never talked about our private games, our separate hours alone in the bedroom. These days, we barely talked at all. But we made sure no one else ever went in the bedroom when one of us was there alone. It was the worst time for Reese and me to be fighting. Neither of us was ever supposed to be home in the afternoon without the other. But I couldn't tell when she might blow up at me and run off somewhere. Daddy Glenn had gotten his dairy routes changed and no longer had a full schedule. He'd been coming home a lot in the afternoons and had gone back to looking worried all the time. He'd yell at me one day that I was getting too big to run around in a t-shirt with no bra, and the next accuse me of pretending to be grown up. Mama said he was fighting with his daddy, and we were to stay out of his way until things settled down. But Aunt Alma and Uncle Wade were fighting again too, so I couldn't hang around over there. And Aunt Ruth was really sick now. "You go out to Raylene's," she told me finally. "You never sent me to Raylene's before," I complained. "I thought you didn't want me going out to her place." I was hoping she'd let me come to the diner again and work in the kitchen. I liked it down there. I liked listening to the waitresses tell jokes and watching the truckers flirt with Mama like she was still the prettiest woman in the county.
"I never said that. I ain't never said nothing to you about Raylene."
I could tell Mama was angry from the high pitch of her voice.
Did somebody say something to you about Raylene?
No, Mama.
You sure?
Mama took hold of my wrist so hard my skin burned.
You sure?
What would anyone say about Raylene? Mama let go of my arm.
Never mind asking questions. Just don't you go making things up, little girl.
You're not too big to have your britches warmed.
I'm sorry, but you never sent me out to Raylene's before.
Well, maybe I didn't think you were old enough to be staying out on the river before. Mama was exasperated and impatient. She pushed her hair back with both hands and wiped her lips.
Garvey's doing some work for Mr. Birdforth's service station these afternoons, after he gets out of school.
He can give you a ride, and I should hope I can trust you not to get in any trouble while you're there.
Garvey was happy to give me a lift to Aunt Raylene's place, particularly after Mama gave him a dollar for gas money.
I ain't making no real money cleaning up for Mr. Birdforth, he told me. Man's as cheap as they come.
But at least I'm learning something. Daddy says a mechanic can always find a job.
Yeah.
I was restless and uninterested in Garvey's troubles. Aunt Alma joked that the twins were too lazy to fart on their own, and sometimes I thought she was right. They were certainly dumb enough. Neither of them ever read a book or talked about anything but how rich they were going to be someday. Mama said you could tell they were starting to grow up by how silly they had become, that teenagers always got stupid before they got smart. I wondered if that was what was happening to me, if I had already started to get stupid and just didn't know it. Not that it mattered. Stupid or smart, there wasn't much choice about what was going to happen to me, or to Gray and Garvey, or to any of us. Growing up was like falling into a hole. The boys would quit school and sooner or later go to jail for something silly. I might not quit school, not while Mama had any say in the matter, but what difference would that make? What was I going to do in 5 years? Work in the textile mill? Join Mama at the diner? It all looked bleak to me. No wonder people got crazy as they grew up. No matter what Mama said, I knew that it wasn't just because of where she lived that I had never spent much time with Aunt Raylene. For all she was a boat rat woman, there were ways Raylene had always been different from her sisters. She was quieter, more private, living alone with her dogs and fishing lines, and seemingly happy that way. She had always lived out past the city limits, and her house was where the older boy cousins tended to go. Out at Raylene's, they could smoke and curse and roughhouse without interference. She let kids do pretty much anything they wanted. With none of her own, Raylene was convinced that the best way to raise children was to give them their head. "There's no evil in them," she'd always say. "They're just like puppies. They need to wear themselves out now and then." Raylene's place was easy to get to on the Eustace Highway, but set off by itself on a little rise of land. The Greenville River curved around the outcropping where her weathered old shotgun house stood, and from the porch that went around three sides, you could watch the river and the highway that skirted it. Raylene kept the trees cut back and the shrubs low to the ground.
"I don't like surprises," she always said. "I like to see who's coming up on me."
When Raylene was young, Uncle Earl told me, she had been kind of wild. At 17, she had run off with a guy who drove for the carnival, but she never married him. She came home 2 years later to take a job in the textile mill and rent the house where she still lived. Before he went off to Oklahoma, Butch told me that Raylene had worked for the carnival like a man, cutting off her hair and dressing in overalls. She called herself Ray, and with her short, stocky build, big shoulders, and small breasts, I could easily see how no one had questioned her. It was astonishing to imagine running off like that, and I would think about it with wistful longing. Gray or Garvey would talk about how they intended to go traveling once they got out of school, but a girl couldn't go roaming so easily.
But Raylene had done it, and I loved to think how I might too. If I cut my hair real short, learned to smoke and talk rough, maybe I could. Still, Aunt Raylene had a couple of ugly scars behind one ear that she wouldn't talk about, and a way of looking sad and thoughtful that made me think her travels hadn't been the romantic adventures the boys described. If I followed her lead, I might come back with worse scars, or not come back at all.
She'd come home to live her life alone, quit the mill after 20 years, still kept her gray hair cut short, and wore trousers as often as skirts. She had only a few friends, all equally quiet private people. Her only social activity seemed to be a weekly card game with the widowed choir director and two of the local school teachers. Dee Dee had called her a lonely old woman once, but Ruth had shushed her, saying a woman was only lonely who wasn't happy with herself. And Raylene was probably the only person any of us would ever meet who was completely satisfied with her own company. Not that anyone left her alone. The uncles were always dropping by around dinner time, and Gray and Garvey seemed to be out there as often as they were home. Raylene was said to be the best cook in the family, and earned steady money by selling her home-canned vegetables and fruit.
"Woman makes the best chow chow in the state," Uncle Beau boasted, "and the second best homebrew."
I had never tasted her whiskey, but Mama took as much of her chow chow as Raylene would let her have. It had a smoky, peppery taste like nothing else, sweet and spicy at the same time. When I started going out to her place, I figured I would make Mama happy by talking Raylene out of a few extra jars. I never imagined that out on the river, I would suddenly find myself as fascinated with my reclusive old aunt as I had ever been with gospel music.
"Trash rises," Aunt Raylene joked the first afternoon I spent with her. "Out here where no one can mess with it, trash rises all the time."
She laughed loud, with great enthusiasm, and spit to the side in a way I had never seen a grown woman do before. On summer nights, Raylene kept old truck tires from the county dump smoldering in the yard to drive the mosquitoes away. The smoke rose in a thick, stinking brown fog, drifting toward the river, where the men came to fish in the cool of the evening, and where Aunt Raylene kept the weeds cut back to discourage bugs and give her a clear view of the banks.
"I like to watch things pass,"
she told me in her lazy, whiskery drawl.
"Time and men and trash out on the river. I just like to watch it all go around the bend."
She spoke softly, smelling a little of alcohol and pepper, chow chow and homebrew, and the wood smoke tang that clung to her skin all the time. I watched her shift her hips in her overalls. She was as big around as Aunt Alma, but moved as easily and gracefully as a young boy, squatting on her heels to pull weeds and swinging her arms as she walked around her yard. Uncle Earl had said she'd loved to dance when she was young, and she looked as if she still could. Aunt Raylene's house was scrubbed clean, but her walls were lined with shelves full of oddities, old tools and bird nests, rare dishes, and peculiarly shaped rocks. An amazing collection of things accumulated on the riverbank below her house. People from Greenville tossed their garbage off the highway a few miles up the river. There, it would sink out of sight in the mud, and eventually work its way down to Aunt Raylene's, where the river turned, then rise to get caught in the roots of the big trees along the bank. Aunt Raylene said the garbage drew the fish in, and it was true that the fishing at her place was the best in the county. The uncles went to Aunt Raylene's to catch carp and catfish and big brown unnamed fish with rotting eyes and gilded fins that people were afraid to eat. Uncle Earl and Uncle Beau would put out their poles with little bells on the lines and stand in the tire smoke to drink whiskey and tell dirty stories. The bells would tinkle now and then, but they didn't always stop to go get their catch. Sometimes the whiskey and the stories were too good. Raylene offered me a glass of lemon tea when I showed up, and then quickly put me to work. She had me pick the fresh vegetables out of her side garden so she wouldn't have to do all that bending over.
"I just about ruined my back at that damn mill," she said with a grin and a sigh. "Always leaning forward and reaching. Now I'd rather run than bend." "You be careful of your back, Bone, or it'll be damn stiff when you get old."
She told me to go down to the river to pull in whatever trash had accumulated in the tree roots. I came home with fresh tomatoes, okra, 2 jars of chow chow, and the head off a Betsy Wetsy doll, the one with the silly rubber curl on her forehead. Raylene told Mama I was the kind of girl she liked, quiet and hard-working,
and said she'd pay in kind for my help a couple of days a week. So I started spending all my time with Raylene while Reese went off to afternoon Bible classes at the Jesus Love Academy. Every day I dragged stuff up from the river. Baby carriage covers, tricycle wheels, shoes, plastic dishes, jump rope handles, ragged clothes, and once, the headlight off a Harley Davidson motorcycle. "This is good stuff," Aunt Raylene usually said. "You got an eye for things, girl. I can clean and patch those clothes up. We'll just soak the dishes in bleach and give the rest of it a scrubbing. Saturday morning, we'll put out blankets and sell it off the side of the road. You get your mama to send you over on the weekend, and I'll give you a tenth of everything we earn." I loved her praise more than the money. Loved being good at something. Loved hearing Aunt Raylene tell Uncle Bo what a worker I was. Sometimes she'd come down to the river and watch me climb around the tree roots. "You're pretty sure on your feet," she told me. "Looks like you ain't scared of falling in." "Why should I be?" I watched her light a cigarette the same way Uncle Earl did, striking the match against her thumbnail. "Little river water ain't gonna hurt me."
"No, it won't. It won't. But you'd be surprised how silly some people get about the notion of falling in, or getting their pants wet, or bumping themselves on an old river rock. I had Alma's girl Temple out here once after she quit school, and it turned out she was scared of snapping turtles. Girl was convinced they were waiting for her just under the surface of the water, waiting to snap her little toes off and eat them up. Can you imagine?"
She took a drag on her cigarette, cupping it in her hand away from the river breeze.
"Oh, Lord."
She arched her back and then sank down in a squat on the bank, her black serge skirt bunching up under her.
"I am so tired of people whining about what might happen to them, never taking no chances or doing anything new. I'm glad you ain't gonna be like that, Bone. I'm counting on you to get out there and do things, girl. Make people nervous and make your old aunt glad."
She wrapped her arms around her knees and looked off down the river. I saw her do that a lot, sit out there and stare into the distance. She always seemed completely comfortable with herself, elbows locked around her knees and one hand drawn up to smoke. Sometimes she'd hum softly, no music I'd ever heard. Aunt Raylene hated most everything that played on the radio, saved her greatest contempt for the kind of country ballads that bemoaned the faithless lover and always included a little spoken part during the chorus.
"Terrible maudlin shit," she'd declare. "You don't like that, do you, Bone?"
I promised her that no, I didn't.
Course I didn't,
not mentioning that I had liked it before. I would have hated for her to think I didn't have good sense. For my own protection, I never talked to her about gospel music. I couldn't bear it if Raylene laughed at the music I dreamed of singing. Aunt Alma's girl Patsy Ruth came out to Aunt Raylene's to get out of caring for Tadpole. The baby had finally been diagnosed with a heart condition, though she didn't look sick, just very small and slightly blue. At 4, she still fit in Alma's laundry basket and had to be watched all the time. "Tadpole falls asleep, and it looks like she ain't breathing. Mama gets all crazy, thinks she's died or something, and goes shaking her till she cries. Gets on my nerves," Patsy Ruth complained. "I'd rather pull weeds for Aunt Raylene any day." Patsy Ruth wanted to help me pull stuff out of the river, but hated getting mud on herself. She stayed up on the exposed roots of the trees and rarely retrieved anything worth the trouble. Still, she was the one who saw the hooks, 2 of them, linked together with a rusted chain, big four-pronged things still dragging little shreds of rope.
"Look at the shine," she yelled, almost sliding down in the mud. "Look at there. It's something, I bet you. Something."
I climbed out on one of the roots until I could reach down to the curved metal edge that was showing through the brown water. It was hard to untangle the hooks from the muddy trash. By the time I worked them free, I'd slid down and had one leg thigh deep in the mud.
"You get your ass down here and help me," I yelled at Patsy Ruth, but she had no intention of risking the river. Instead, she ran back to find Gray and Garvey.
My sweet Jesus, look at the size of them.
Gray pulled the hooks out of my hands even before I got them up the bank.
That sucker's longer than my arm.
What is it?
It's a hook. A set of hooks.
Any fool can see that. What's it for? Garvey had come up, too, and was just as eager to get his hands on the hooks as Gray was. He was always fighting with his brother, always challenging anything Gray said.
Mountain climbing? It's for mountain climbing, Gray told us.
I didn't believe that any more than Garvey, but Gray was so insistent, we kept quiet while we ran our fingers along the rusty points of the hooks.
Look at the edge on them points. They'd sink into rock with no trouble at all. You don't need nothing like that to climb the mountains around here.
Garvey pulled at the chain dangling down.
You don't need nothing. Oh, hell, probably some Yankee brought them down. Didn't know what our mountains were like.
Gray was adamant. Nothing would serve but that we would agree that the hooks were for climbing, no matter how silly it was to imagine Yankees coming down to climb our mountains with those hooks. But Garvey wasn't going to give in so easily.
You ain't got the sense you was born with, he spat. Even Yankees ain't that dumb. You calling me stupid? Oh, for Jesus' sake.
I grabbed the hooks then, before somebody got himself stabbed with one. They were heavy, but not so heavy that I couldn't swing one around and throw it if I had to. Gray was right about one thing. Those barbs were sharp under the rust. And not only at the points, but all along the edges that had curled back on themselves. Gray-green algae hid most of the metal shine, but it came off easy with a little scraping. The rust was harder, but it too came off when I ran my pocket knife up and down the prongs. In the center of each hook, where the four points came together, there was a packed mass of gluey river mud, weeds, and fish pieces. I set to scraping it all clean and got the boys interested enough to stop fighting for a while. They used a tire iron to pop the chain and separate the two hooks, each taking one as if they intended to keep them.
Once we get them cleaned up, I'll show you how mountain climbers use them.
Gray was still determined to convince us that he knew what the hooks were all about. Garvey laughed at him.
You try throwing that son of a bitch up in a tree, and you gonna put somebody's eye out when the chain catches on a branch. I ain't gonna throw it up no tree.
Gray looked disgusted.
I'm gonna use it to pull myself right up the side of the house. I'm gonna wave at you from the roof, and then you can tell me I'm crazy.
He did it, too. Tied a good long rope to the chain dangling off his hook, and swung it around and around until he got it high enough, and launched it at the house. The barbs dug right into the wood below the roof line, and gouged deep enough to support Gray's weight. Though once he climbed up there, he couldn't swing around to get a leg over the roof's edge after all. Garvey tried it next, forgetting that they had been arguing, but he had the same problem. He did manage to hang on to the ridge pole while he worked the hook loose and tossed it down. Then he slid down after it, by some miracle not breaking any bones. Neither of them saw me grab Garvey's abandoned hook and start edging toward the side of the house.
"We'll aim it at the roof this time," Garvey told us. "Get it on the roof itself. Then we'll be able to climb up over the top by pulling on the rope."
"You'll do no such thing."
Aunt Raylene had come up behind me while we were all looking at Garvey. She grabbed one hook out of my hands and the other from Gray.
"You trying to kill one of these children?"
She looked up then and saw the holes the hook had gouged in her wall.
"Oh my Jesus."
Her left hand snaked out and slapped first Gray, then Garvey.
"You digging holes in my house. You planning to just walk off and leave it like that, I suppose? No matter that it's gonna let the rain in and rot my wall."
The chain dangling from one fist knocked against the skirt of the print dress she'd worn to go into town.
"I'm surprised you ain't killed each other already."
"No."
She shook her head and spat snuff juice to the side.
"No, what's surprising is that I ain't killed you already."
"It ain't that deep a hole,"
Gray tried to tell her.
"It ain't gonna let the rain in."
The color rushed into Aunt Raylene's face, and her eyes went glassy.
I thought for a moment how Uncle Bo said Aunt Raylene moved out to the river after she got in trouble on the carnival circuit and cut a man up for trying to mess with her. Now she looked like she was going to swing one of those hooks at Gray's belly. The other kids took off at a run, and Gray stumbled back out of her reach.
"Aunt Raylene," he pleaded, sweat breaking out on his face. "Aunt Raylene now. Aunt Raylene, wait."
"You crazy little bastard," she hissed at him.
She caught his arm in one hand and shook him back and forth like a fish on a pole.
"All of you, don't you know what this is?"
She waved the tines up close to Gray's face.
"You think this is a big old fish hook?"
"Well, it ain't. It's for tauling, for dragging. You go down in the river, and they'll use something like this to pull you up in chunks. Pull you loose from the junk in that deep mud. Pull you up in pieces, you hear me? Nasty slices of you, little boy, for your mama to cry over."
Aunt Raylene's tale didn't really scare us. When I tried to imagine my flesh in pieces, it was like a cartoon, completely unreal. But in the night, stringy, terrible pieces of meat loomed in my dreams. The hooks got in my dreams, too, dripping blood and river mud. Maybe it hadn't been fish parts I'd cleaned out of them. It could have been anything. I made up stories about where those hooks had come from, who had lost them, until Patsy Ruth got nightmares. She dreamed that she had drowned in the river, and the morticians had to sew pieces of her back together to look like somebody. Only they had to sew different people's pieces together just to make up one reasonable body to bury to show her mama. When she told Aunt Alma, Alma told me to stop making up such gruesome stories. Aunt Raylene put a lock on her cellar door to keep all of us away from the hooks, and everyone seemed to forget about them. But a few weeks later, I started to dream about them again. This time, their razor points whistled when the wind blew, and the steel edges reflected light where there was none. I would wake up from those dreams with my teeth aching, my ears throbbing as if there were a wind blowing on me, stinking, cold, and constant. I wanted one of those hooks, wanted it for my own. That cold, sharp metal where I could put my hand out and touch it at any time. I started going over to Aunt Raylene's place every chance I got, hanging out and being helpful. I pulled weeds and picked tomatoes, corn, and peppers. When canning started, I was there to boil the mason jars and melt the wax, while Raylene cut and chopped at her kitchen table. I brought the fruit jars up from the cellar. I brought up the wax, the rubber seals, and the metal racks. And when Aunt Raylene went out to put her neck under the old water pump on the far side of the house, I brought up one of the hooks. I hid it under the porch before anyone could see, laughing because it was so easy to do. But when I got back to the kitchen, Mama was standing there over the bubbling vats. "You want these peaches to boil over?" she asked me. "You gotta watch this stuff close. You can't be running off in the yard with a fire under these pots." She planted me on a stool by the stove. "You sit here and keep your eyes open, little girl." Aunt Raylene came in laughing and pinched my shoulder.
"Aw, Annie, Bone's the best you got. Works like a dog, she does. Just like you and me."
I dropped my shoulders and stared into the simmering pot of peaches. For 3 days running, then, I sat at that stove while Aunt Raylene and Mama gossiped and cooked.
"How's Glenn doing?"
Raylene's voice was polite, as if she didn't care much whether Mama answered or not.
"Oh, he's fine. His dairy roots don't seem to have worked out the way he hoped, and I think he and his daddy were fighting for a while there. But lately he's been working more in the processing plant itself. He don't talk about it. Don't think he wants me to hear him complaining about his daddy. But at least it's full time again. Just wish he made more money."
"I know what you mean."
"You do, don't you? When you first worked at the mill, you didn't make enough money to spit at."
"Oh, they never wanted to have me do what I knew how to do best. Wanted me to work on the line rather than fix their machines. Never could accept that I was a better mechanic than a mill worker. After a while, I just gave up fighting them about it. Couldn't stand being that poor anymore. especially since my creditors couldn't hardly stand what I wasn't paying them.
Raylene's grin was wicked. She poured herself some hot coffee and leaned over closer to Mama.
"Remember that time Alma wouldn't let the sheriff take her furniture?" she asked. "That time she started screaming for the neighbors, how they were trying to rob her?"
"God, yes," Mama laughed. "And that sheriff liked to pee in his pants when he saw her throwing clothes out the window and yelling, 'Take it all, why don't you? Take the kids, too, take it all!'"
"Oh, my sweet Jesus, yes." "Wade always said she threw her house dress at him and then just stood there in her underwear. And he wasn't going to go near her after that."
"Oh, no, girl, that's just what people tell. She didn't really do that. She just threatened to do that."
"It's a better story if she had done it, which is probably why they say she stripped down to her panties, huh?"
"Just like her, too. Alma ain't scared of hell or high water."
"Not like her girls."
"No." Mama looked over at me. "Give that rack a jiggle," she told me. "You don't want them jars to settle too much." She stretched her neck to look over without getting up. "I don't think those jars are setting deep enough in that pot." Aunt Raylene poured Mama some more iced tea.
"Oh, Annie.
Bone's doing a good job. When she grows up, she's gonna know all she'll need about canning and cooking
and gossiping in the kitchen."
Mama spooned a little more sugar into her tea. "Raylene, you're spoiling her. You should have had some of your own, and then you'd watch them all a little more sharply."
"Well, for not birthing any, it sure feels like I've raised a crowd. Seems like I've had somebody's kids under my feet for years now. Ain't nobody in this family ever been selfish with their children. Why, I've got up many a morning to find a porch full of youngins somebody's dropped off in the night."
"Most often Alma's."
"Oh, don't go on about Alma. She's got a good heart for all that temper of hers, and maybe because of it. And damn, but she's had a hard time, especially with her girls. It don't surprise me that this sick baby of hers is a girl. She's had no luck with her girls. Ever since Temple left home, she's gone as sour as bad whiskey."
"Everybody says Temple takes after Alma, but I can't see it," Mama said. "I'd swear the girl was never easy in her body. Never gave a hoot about nobody or nothing, except her pride." Aunt Raylene started giggling over the lip of her tea glass.
"You know, she was standing in the yard that time the sheriff came and all the yelling started. Stood out there and tried to pretend wasn't nothing going on. Wasn't no sheriffs in the yard with a warrant, no beating on the door, nobody throwing clothes out the window. The girl's purely amazing."
"What'd she do? Offer him a glass of water?"
"Hell no. She tried to get Alma out of the house so she could give up the furniture quietly. She didn't care what happened. Didn't care that the furniture store man really was trying to rob her mama. Just didn't want the neighbors to think they couldn't keep up the payments."
"As if everybody didn't know it already. You can't keep secrets like that."
"Well, you and I don't even try. And certainly Alma don't. She knows who she is. But it's different for the kids. Seems like they're all the time wanting just what they can't have. And they've got such a funny dose of pride."
"No pride at all, or too much. I can't tell sometimes."
"Different from us is all, maybe."
Aunt Raylene's face went slack, and her voice dropped.
"Look at your girls, too, Annie. I've seen it in them. Not like Temple, no. But something. Something hard and angry that only shows now and again."
They went quiet and looked over at me. I tried to pretend I hadn't been listening, concentrating on waving the steam away so that I could see down into the pot. But if I slanted my eyes sideways, I could still see them clear. Through the steam, they both looked older. Two worn, tired women repeating old stories to each other and trying not to worry too much about things they couldn't change anyway. It struck me then how young they both were to be looking so old. Neither of them as old as Madeline. Mama not yet 26, and Aunt Raylene less than 10 years older. Still, they seemed so different from me. Almost as if they had come out of another century. I wished then that I could be more like them. Easier in my body,
and not so angry all the time. Too much pride or too little? What was wrong with me? I wondered.
After all the peaches had been canned, the tomatoes and the snap peas, Aunt Raylene did the rest of the fruit, the plums and the apples and the blackberries. The days were full of sweat and steam and boiling pots. I spent every minute I was not in school planted on a stool in her kitchen, peeling or scrubbing or watching pots while Aunt Raylene told me stories and my neck cramped with worry. I was afraid somebody would find my hook under her porch, but I couldn't get it out of there until the canning was done. If one of the uncles found that hook, I knew Aunt Raylene would figure out that it was me who had brought it up out of the cellar. One early evening when we were almost finished putting up the canned fruit racks, Gray came into the kitchen, his face so bright it jumped out at me. His grin was spread so wide, I gave him a shove before Aunt Raylene could see.
"You found it!" I hissed at him.
He stared at me for a long minute and then grinned wider.
"You? Huh, Bone? You the one been going in and out the cellar all this time, huh? Slick, girl, slick. Just keep your mouth shut, or Aunt Raylene will hide it where we'll never find it."
"I ain't gonna tell nobody."
"You looking like that, she'll know something is going on."
Gray laughed and twirled a finger in a smear of blackberry juice I hadn't had time to clean up.
"You talk any louder and she'll hear it from you."
I looked down the center hall into the room at the end. Aunt Raylene was folding towels and humming to herself. I pushed Gray back out onto the porch and looped my arm around his neck.
I knew that if I got bossy, he'd just run off with the hook and I'd never see it again.
I thought about the way Mama was always gentle in Daddy Glenn, and I deliberately made my voice soft and slow.
"I got an idea,"
I whispered into Gray's ear.
"Got a plan to use that hook for something nobody else would have ever thought of."
Gray grinned at me like I'd grown an extra set of teeth.
"Something good, huh?" "Something amazing. And I want you to help me."
I tried to rub his neck, but he shook my hand off.
"Tell me."
I hesitated, looking back toward the door where Aunt Raylene might appear any minute. Gray's face was bland, showing nothing but patience. He wasn't like his brother. Of the two of them, he was the one who did things, who rarely told secrets even when he was trying to impress someone. I gritted my teeth and then shook my head. I might as well tell him and find out what he would do. I stepped away from him and shoved my hands down in my shorts.
"I want to get up on the roof of the Woolworths one night. I got an idea how to get in there without anybody knowing."
Now Gray turned his head, looked back at the door.
"You're serious, ain't you?"
he whispered. It was not a question. I stood still, waiting.
"Well, hellfire, Bone. You got past Aunt Raylene's suspicious mind, but grand theft's a different matter. What makes you think you can get away with it?"
I rocked back on my bare feet, trying to look confident. "There are things I've done you don't know nothing about, cousin. Stuff I ain't never gonna tell you. Just like I won't never tell nobody what you and me are gonna do." I tried to narrow my eyes the way Uncle Earl's would shrink down when he played poker. Gray pursed his lips, whistled, and leaned over the side rail of the porch.
"All right, Bone, all right. But if we get caught, I'm gonna tell him it was your idea. You just better know that now."
I couldn't help myself. I laughed out loud.
Gray grinned back at me, looking only a little puzzled.
"Don't worry, cousin," I told him. "We get caught, and I'll tell him. I promise."
I didn't mention that there wasn't a chance in hell anyone would believe such a tale. Not with Gray older than me and a boy besides. If we did get caught, I'd be in trouble. He'd be in more. But I had no intention of getting caught. I let him get the hook out from under the porch while I stayed up in the kitchen and kept Aunt Raylene busy.
"Just don't you tell nobody," I insisted.
"Won't tell a soul, Bone," he promised. "Not a soul."
He grinned so wide, I had to believe him. That night, I slept over at Aunt Raylene's place. After she was asleep, I snuck out to get the hook. I took it back to my room, pried the chain off, and cleaned and polished it. When it was shiny and smooth, I got in bed and put it between my legs, pulling it back and forth. It made me shiver and go hot at the same time. I had read in one of the paperbacks Daddy Glenn hid in the garage about women who pushed stuff up inside them. I held the chain and thought about that, rubbed it against my skin and hummed to myself. I wasn't like the women in those books, but it felt good to hold that metal, to let those links slip back and forth until they were slippery. I used the lock I had found on the riverbank to fasten the chain around my hips. It felt sun-warmed and tingly against my skin, as shiny as the sweat on Uncle Earl's freckled shoulders, as exciting as the burning light behind my eyes. It was mine. It was safe. Every link on that chain was magic in my hand. I put my head back and smiled. The chain moved under the sheet. I was locked away and safe. What I really was could not be touched. What I really wanted was not yet imagined. Somewhere far away, a child was screaming. But right then, it was not me. Chapter 13. I carried my hook home in a croaker sack with the last of the zucchini and cucumbers from Aunt Raylene's garden. I didn't trust Reese enough to risk taking it in the house, so I hid it in one of Mama's packing boxes, tucked up in the rafters over the washing machine. Up there, it was safe and out of sight. A talisman against the dark and anything that waited in the dark. It made me stand taller just to know it was there. Made me feel as if I had suddenly become magically older, stronger, almost dangerous. I would look up every time I helped Mama with the laundry. Look up as if I were lost in thought or dreaming of the future. "You've changed, Bone." Mama pulled towels and sheets out of the washing machine and dropped them into the basket I was holding. "No, ma'am, not really." I dropped my head down. "Yes, you have. I'd say you were even a little taller. You hold your head up more. I can even see your eyes now and then." Mama grinned at me and dropped the last of the towels in my basket. She had to reach over the machine for her bag of clothespins. An old T-shirt she had sewed closed at the bottom and hung on a coat hanger. While her face was turned, I looked up and made sure my box was still securely in place. "Reese tell you that Shannon Pearl called?" I was already going out the door toward the clothesline, but Mama's words stopped me.
"She did?"
"Uh-huh. I didn't talk to her, but Reese said she just asked if you were around. You might think about calling her back."
"I don't know, Mama. I don't know if I should."
"Well, I ain't telling you that you have to, but you should think about it, Bone. Ain't no sense in being hard-hearted, and talking to her won't kill you. She might want to apologize, you know."
"Yes, ma'am."
I started shaking out a sheet to hang it on the line. I didn't want Mama to see my face. I had no intention of calling Shannon Pearl. Mama never asked why Shannon Pearl and I had quarreled. The only time she mentioned it was when she agreed with Aunt Raylene that it was probably better to stay out of kids' arguments. I'd walked in on them talking together and knew immediately what they had been discussing. So I turned right around and went back out. Mama had gotten angry when Mrs. Pearl called to tell her that I'd never apologized for taking a swing at Shannon, though not because she thought I should have been made to apologize. Her anger was at my careless stupidity.
"Don't you know you can put somebody's eye out hitting them in the face?"
"Yes, Mama."
"No reason to be hitting people anyway."
"No, ma'am."
"Well?"
She looked at me closely. I knew she was waiting for me to say something, but I just kept my eyes on the table.
"I don't know about the pearls. They should have brought you home right away, instead of making you sit in the car while they went all over everywhere."
She started rummaging through her purse for her cigarettes. "And I don't know why she's calling after all this time."
"No, ma'am."
I didn't want to discuss Shannon Pearl. By now, I was sure, she was lonely for someone to talk to and had gotten her mama to call us. Mama sighed tiredly.
"Well, you just stay out of trouble.
I don't want to be explaining your behavior to other people all the time."
No, ma'am.
It was just before Thanksgiving that Shannon Pearl called our house and got me on the phone.
I'm not gonna apologize,
she said right away, as if no time at all had passed.
Her voice sounded strange after not hearing it for so long.
I don't care what you do, I told her. I held the phone with my shoulder and picked my cuticles.
Stop that,
Mama said as she went by on her way to the kitchen. Yes, ma'am, I said automatically.
What's that?
Shannon sounded hopeful.
I was talking to my mama. Why'd you call me?
There was a sigh, and then Shannon cleared her throat a couple of times.
Well, I thought I should. No sense us fighting over something so silly, anyway. I bet you can't even remember what it was about.
I remember, I told her, and my voice sounded cold even to me. For a moment, I was ashamed, then angry.
Why should I care if I hurt her feelings? Who was she to me?
My mama said I could call you, Shannon whispered. Said I could ask you over this Sunday. We're gonna have a barbecue for some of Daddy's people from Mississippi. They're bringing us some Georgia peaches and some eggshell pecans.
I bit at my thumbnail and said nothing.
You could ask your mama if you could come. Shannon's voice sounded breathless and desperate, almost squeaky.
If you wanted to,
she added. I wondered what she had said in order to get her mama to agree I could come over. Out on the porch, Reese had started shouting at Patsy Ruth.
You don't even know how to play this game.
Why should I go to the Pearls' house and watch her fat relatives eat themselves sick?
Mama gave me a record player,
Shannon said suddenly.
I got a bunch of records for it.
Yeah?
Lots of them.
I heard her mother saying something in the background.
I gotta go. Are you gonna come?
Maybe. I don't know. I'll think about it. I hung up the phone and saw Mama was watching me from the kitchen. Shannon wants me to come over to her house this Sunday. They're having a barbecue.
You want to go?
Maybe. I don't know.
Mama nodded and handed me a towel. Well, come help me. And you be sure and tell me if you're going before Sunday. I ain't gonna want no surprises on Sunday morning. I might want to spend the whole day in bed. You never can tell.
She smiled, and I hugged her. I loved it when she looked like that. It made the whole house feel warm and safe.
I might want to go on a trip myself.
Mama slapped my behind lightly.
But I ain't going nowhere till we get these dishes done, girl. And it's your turn to dry.
Yes, ma'am. I didn't plan to go. I really didn't. I certainly didn't call Shannon back, and I didn't say anything to Mama either. But Sunday afternoon, I started walking toward Shannon's house, carrying Reese's tin bucket as if I was going hunting for late muscadins. Along the way, I shook the wilting gray-green vines that would die off as soon as the first good freeze came. In the movies, people were always swinging from vines like those. But every time Reese or I tried it, we wound up falling on our behinds. Maybe they had a different kind of vines in the forests where they made movies. But then they probably didn't grow muscadins there. I hummed as I walked, snatches of Mama's favorite hymns and mine, alternating between Somebody Touched Me and Oh Sinner Man. Reese always sang it as Whoa Sinner Man, which made Uncle Earl bark out his donkey's bray laugh. I missed Earl. We weren't going to see him until spring. He'd been sent to the county farm for busting a man's jaw and breaking a window down at the Cracker Blue Cafe. Aunt Alma said he'd gotten into more fights at the farm, and a bunch of men had held him down and shaved off all his black hair. I tried to imagine him bald-headed.
That'll slow down his womanizing.
Aunt Alma had sounded almost pleased.
What's womanizing?
Reese hadn't learned yet that asking questions when the aunts were talking just got you pushed outside. I'd tried to tell her that if she ever wanted to learn anything, she should just shut up and listen and try to figure it out later.
What are you doing listening to other people's business?
Mama had been really angry.
You get out of here, all of you.
See what you did? I'd been righteously indignant. I wasn't used to being put out with the little kids.
Now we'll never know why they shaved his head.
Oh, I know that already.
Reese smirked and put her arm around Patsy Ruth. Granny said he tried to cut some fellow's dick off.
I'd never come up to the Pearls' house from the back before. I usually came down the road from the Sears Tire Center, but that Sunday, I cut through the backyards of the big houses.